welcome to the first edition of the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to discuss the catching position, and specifically, draft strategies by different league type, as well as my comments on specific players. But before I begin, I wanted to provide some background information about myself. You can find my work at Baseball Professor, Through the Fence Baseball, and MattCummins.com. Before I talk about the catching position, I wanted to talk about this podcast. I created this podcast because I wanted to figure out a way to be a better communicator. If you read my writing, I think I'm a pretty good writer. I'm not really good, but I think I do a pretty good job. But in order to become a better fantasy analyst, I need to be a better communicator. And if I don't improve upon that, then I'll never grow as a fantasy analyst or expert or whatever. I don't think I ever will be a fantasy expert. It'd be really cool though if I actually could do that. But the reason why I'm doing this, like I said before, is because I want to be a better communicator. And one of the things you have to do when you are a fantasy analyst or expert, you need to be able to communicate in multiple mediums. And one of the mediums is through a podcast or doing radio hits or something like that. And the only way I'm going to get better is if I start doing it and not just, continuing to write articles all the time and not improving, another skill set that's lacking in my arsenal right now. So hopefully this will be entertaining for you. Hopefully, you'll actually take some knowledge from this. And if not, it's totally fine. I'm going to continue doing this for as long as possible until, I don't want to do it anymore. So right now, this is basically a passion project, and I hope you enjoy it. And all right, let's talk about the catching position. The rankings I'm referring to can be found at mattcummins.com. If you go to the homepage and click on the link that says positional previews, there you'll find a link to the catching position. On the page, you'll find the tiered rankings of the top 30 catchers for the 2014 season. Also, what you'll find I forget. I'm a little tired right now. I haven't gotten any sleep. But on that page, you'll find supplemental information about some of the catchers that are on the list. If you're looking for more in-depth information about every single player, I recommend you reading my fantasy guide that comes out on March 1st. There, you can find the fantasy guide. If you go to mattcummins.com and you go to the homepage and you click on the fantasy guides link, there you'll find the 2014 fantasy guide with over 440 player profiles. The catching position is either really shallow or really deep depending upon your league settings. If you're playing in a one-catcher league, that's either 10 to 12 teams, I recommend waiting before you draft your catcher. If you're playing in a 15-team league or a 16-team league with one catcher, I recommend trying to get one of the tier one guys and then maybe waiting to the end of your draft before acquiring a catcher. If you're playing in a two-catcher league, I recommend trying to draft either a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 catcher to anchor your catching position, and then maybe trying to fill in your second catcher towards the end of the draft, because the Tier 1 and Tier 2 catchers will provide a lot more stability and actually will provide really good numbers in comparison to a replacement-level player. And a replacement-level player is someone that, obviously something that you can find on the waiver wire, and with catcher being a very scarce position, The replacement level player is going to be a lot lower when compared to another position like first base or even second base. Even if you remove replacement level players from the equation, this is still a very scarce position. For example, if you look at my tier 3 players, there are a lot of question marks. Will Miguel Montero hit again? He's coming off a really down year. Will Matt Wieters no longer be a batting average risk? Probably not. Will Brian McCann stay healthy? And if he does stay healthy, will his home runs increase? If so, how much of the batting average risk will he become? Will he have like a Curtis Granderson type of season where he hits for a lot more power, but then his batting average drops even further and becomes a batting average liability? So now I want to talk about my tiered rankings. In my first tier, I have Joe Mauer and Buster Posey. Now, I wanted to focus on Joe Mauer because he's my number one catcher. He's my number one catcher because, he's no longer going to be catching, which means he should be able to receive a 10 to 15% increase in his play appearances. And he also has a 323 lifetime batting average. Now, if you combine those two factors, those are what make it really appealing to me, is because he'll have the most play appearances of anyone in the catching position, and he'll also act as an anchor for your batting average. Now, when you have someone that's batting 323 in your lineup, you'll be able to supplement your roster with maybe low batting average liabilities, such as a Billy Hamilton or someone else that has really low batting average, like maybe even like an Adam Dunn or a Chris Carter. Now, those may be extreme examples, but when you have someone like that on your team, if you even have another high batting average player like a Mike Trout, for example, if you have those two type of players, you can actually absorb a really low batting average like a Chris Carter and still reap the rewards of that player. So moving on to the second tier of catcher, I wanted to focus on Jonathan Lucroy because on my board, he's my number four catcher, and he's currently going as the number seven catcher in NFBC leagues. What I like about Lucroy is that he provides stats in every category. He'll provide a 280 plus batting average. He'll provide, 15 to 20 home runs, 5 to 10 stolen bases. Now, since we only have one full year of data, it's easy to see why someone may be hesitant to acquire Lucroy. But if you look at his 2012 year, if he played a full year, he would have ended the year with 20 home runs and 7 stolen bases. Now, if you look at last year, he actually had 18 home runs and 9 stolen bases. So it's not really crazy to think that he could be a 2010 player, which is very rare for a catcher. In general, the second tier of catcher, they're all pretty reliable. You have a really good expectation of what they're going to provide for your team. Now, the only player I have really major red flags about is Yadier Molina. Now, I still rank him number 3 overall, but he's still going to be turning 32 in July. And in general, catchers wear down more quickly or sooner compared to other positions. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does regress a little bit just due to age or plays less games than he has in his career. But those are just minor quibbles. Even though I ranked him number 3, I probably won't be drafting him. I'll probably try to acquire someone else in the tier 2 because I can probably get them at a lower cost. And they also have higher upside when comparing or in comparison to Yadier. So moving on to the tier 3. Like I said earlier, tier 3 has a lot of players that either have low upside or they're players that carry a good amount of risk. For example, Brian McCann. I'm not buying Brian McCann at all this year. I believe he'll be a batting average risk, and the home runs may tick up a little bit. But if it does tick up, I feel like he'll have like a Curtis Granderson type of change where he sells out for more power. He'll maybe hit 25 home runs, but he'll be at a 235 batting average rather than a 250 batting average. And I don't want to have players with those type of batting averages on my team. And what I really want to talk about was Miguel Montero. Now, obviously, he had a really down year last year. Now, it's really easy to say that his BABIP was so low that if that just regresses back to his career mean, he'll be a 280 hitter and he'll hit for power again and everything will be fine. But the problem that I have with Montero is that, let me pull up the stats here, is that in the last 3-4 years his ground ball rate has increased year over year, and that's never a really good thing, especially when you're talking about a power hitting catcher. Last year, he had a ground ball rate of about 45%, which is really high, considering that from 2008 to 2010, he had a ground ball rate of like 35%. So we're talking about a 10% increase in his ground ball rate. Now, in general, if you read my writing, you know that I don't like players who hit the ball on the ground because they end up being more BABIP dependent. And if you're hitting less balls in the air, there's a decreased likelihood of hitting home runs. So he did have a lower BABIP than his career, but he also hit more ground balls. And last year, he had the second highest ground ball rate of his career. If you combine that, I don't really see much upside with Montero unless he starts hitting the ball in the air again. So I think even though he had a poor year in terms of the BABIP and the batting average, I don't really see much upside with Montero because he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot more, and he never really hit for that much power anyway. So maybe instead of having a ceiling of 15 home runs, it's maybe going to be like, you know, 12. It's possible the reason why he had a poor performance in 2013 is because of injury. For example, he missed a month of the season with the lower back strain. And then in October, he had a surgery to clean out an infection in his left index finger. So it's possible, since he had so many injuries last year, that some fantasy owners may just say his 2013 season was, you know, a fluky year caused by injury. And, you know, that shouldn't happen again. That, you know, there's room for optimism that he can revert back to the player that he was. I have two problems with that notion. First is that back problems tend to be more systemic than one-time occurring. If you have a back problem, it's going to be with you for the rest of your life instead of just going away. Secondly, he had the highest ground ball rate of his career in 2012, before 2013, which tells me that there's less optimism that he can actually go back to the player that he was 3-4 years ago. So moving on to Tier 4. Tier 4 has players that I'm not really high on, but contains players that the industry is high on. For example, Evan Gattis. I believe Evan Gattis will be another JP Aaron Sibbia type player, in that he'll provide 20 to 25 home runs, but his batting average will be so low that he provides less value than the power would indicate. For example, the reason why I believe this is because last year he struggled against non-fastballs from right-handed pitching. Last year he had a 189 batting average against non-fastballs, and I believe this year he'll see even more non-fastballs from right-handed pitching, which will make him a batting average liability. Another player I wanted to talk about was Jason Castro. Now, obviously, last year he had a great year, hitting 276 with 18 home runs. However, I don't foresee that happening again, specifically the batting average. Last year, he had a 351 BABIP combined with a 26.5% strikeout rate. Now, in general, guys that strike out that often will usually have a lower BABIP. Therefore, I believe if the BABIP regresses, so will the batting average. So in 2014, I'm expecting a player that will hit about 245 to 255 with 15 to 20 home runs. Now, in general, that's not a player that I really want because the batting average is so low. But right now he's being drafted among the top 10 because of what he did last year, and I don't think he's going to do that again. The last player I wanted to talk about from this tier was Wilson Ramos. Now, Wilson Ramos is getting a lot of sleeper consideration from the fantasy community because he's had 19 home runs and 400 plate appearances the past two seasons. And a lot of analysts are saying that if he's able to stay on the field for a full season, which is also a big if, that he could actually provide those 20 home runs if he plays the full year. Now, the problem I have with that is because in the last 2 years, he's had 19 home runs. However, those 19 home runs came at a 24% home run to fly ball rate and a 56% ground ball rate. Anytime I see a home run to fly ball rate that high and a ground ball rate that high, it screams to me fluke-based, and I don't foresee that reoccurring again in a larger sample size. So even if Ramos is able to play a full season, I don't see the 20-plus home run potential. I see a player with a 10 to 15 maybe home run potential, probably more around the 10. So now on to Tier 5. The one player I wanted to talk about was Devin Mesoraco. Mesoraco fits the mold of a post-hype sleeper in that he was once a highly regarded top prospect, and now has kind of been forgotten about after 2 years of below average play. In the first 2 years, he was only a part time player as Ryan Hannigan took the majority of the plate appearances. However, Ryan Hannigan has been traded to the Tampa Rays, and now Mesoraco gets the opportunity to be the everyday catcher for the Reds. Now, Mesoraco has not performed really well in his first 2 years. And since he's only done that in limited playing time, I actually, you know, I'm not a scout. I really don't know why he hasn't performed very well. But when I'm looking at a player like this low on the list, I always go back and revert back to the scouting reports that people were saying about him when he was just a prospect. And for me, when I read those scouting reports, all I see are really high-impact tools. And when I'm drafting this low in a draft, I always want the high-end tools. Because a scout once told me, always bet on the tools. So if I'm drafting this low and I need a catcher, Mesoraco is a really good player. Now, if you're looking for more information about other catchers in this tier or any other tier, feel free to check out my fantasy guide that comes out on March 1st. There you'll actually have a better opportunity to get better information than what you're getting right now, because I'm definitely a better writer than I am a communicator. And if you go there, you'll find information about catchers and in any other type of position as well. So with that, I'll take a break, and I'll be back to wrap things up. To thank you for listening to the first edition of the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. The music you've been hearing has been from the band Verbo, and this is a band that I came across when I was in college. When I was in college, there was a radio station at the college, or at the quad, and they were giving away free CD samples of bands that they've received music from. And I randomly picked up a Verbo CD, and it only had two songs on it. And they were both really good, and I ended up buying both of their records within 24 hours. And I've been listening to them even now that I'm 31. So it's been, I don't know, 10 years, 11 years for me, 12 years since I've listened to them for the first time. But this is a band that I think is pretty cool, and they have a really good cello player, which is probably the best part of the band. Well, not the best part, but one of the best parts of the band. So I hope you'll enjoy the music, and I will have links to the band, to the music, in the show details, or what do you call them? They'll be in the blog post. So if you want to reach out to me, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Matt Cummins, or you can read my writing at mattcummins.com, baseball professor, or through the fence baseball. And thank you.
This wasn't what I